Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
What makes for a great vacation? Depends on who you ask. Are you looking to get away? Or bring everyone together? Do you want to get outside and play? Or see a play at the plate? Fortunately, however you operate, I'm the destination you've been looking for. The name's Missouri, but you can call me Mo. And I have just one question. What's your MO? Come see me at visitmo.com.
I'm back. Did you miss me? I'm back. Hello, everyone. It's your good friend, Patrick O'Dowd. I'm joined by David Ungar. I have returned from the wilds of Disney and Disney at Sea, and we are here on Tuesday welcoming you into another edition of the Four Corners Podcast here on the Chairshot Radio Network, a part of the Chairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head, prowrestlingtees.com/chairshot for all of your Chairshot swag needs. And Dave, I have a confession. Didn't listen to a second of Four Corners Podcast while I was gone.
The loyal leader that you are. Excellent. I don't blame you.
It was a half hour I could get back.
We saw your photos, and we know you were having a much better time doing what you were doing.
I sent some photos. I didn't send everything. I sent the photos that would connect the most with the chair shot fellas, basically. Folks, and you're going to hear, for those of you who listened to Bandwagon Nerds yesterday, I apologize that you're hearing this again, but I drank a lot on the cruise, drank more than I think I have since college. And most of that, a lot of that came in the form of tastings. I was gone for a week and a half. I spent a few days in Orlando with the Mouse before I hopped on one of the Mouse's newest ships, the Disney Treasure, to go on a Disney cruise, my first ever cruise of any sort. And the Mrs. O'Dowd, she signed me up for a lot of tastings. And I embraced the tastings. I sat there. So on this cruise, I did a wine tasting with Mrs. O'Dowd. I did a chocolate and liqueur tasting with Mrs. O'Dowd. I did a standard bourbon tasting with Mrs. O'Dowd. I did a beer tasting all on my own, where I pulled out a beer that I enjoyed and looked around for finding, Kentucky Bourbon Barrel by the Lexington Brewing Company. Oddly enough, the liquor store I found it out in my area had it under imports
from Kentucky.
Massachusetts, Kentucky, those are like two very, very different countries.
Let's be real. Massachusetts probably considers Kentucky a foreign country,
but it might be so. And then the capper of the whole trip, at least of the cruise and the tastings, was I got to do kind of as a birthday present from my wife to me, was a reserved bourbon tasting that was highlighted by a Macallan. That was a special black label Macallan that cost $150 per ounce to pour. And what was crazy is, so they have this upscale. So the Disney Treasure has an area in it called Hook's Barbary, Captain Hook's Barbary. It's a barbershop, but it's like an old fashioned style, like shave and a haircut style barbershop that from like the hours of 3 to 8, you could go in and get yourself a scotch or some sort of high-level whiskey. And it was a very intimate setting. And that's where they had this tasting. And within that place, there is a case that has 20 coins. And each coin, and I say coin, they're about the size of a medallion. And folks, I'm doing a gesture, and only Dave can see it. But that medallion, each one of those medallions had a different whiskey on it. And if you bought a pour of that whiskey, you got a medallion as like part of your keepsake. Some of the pours out of those cases went upwards of $400 an ounce to pour. It was crazy, crazy awesome. It was beautiful, That tasting was great. It was a whiskey tasting more than they called it a reserve bourbon tasting. It was a reserve whiskey tasting. Like we had an Irish whiskey, we had a bourbon, we had a Japanese whiskey, we had a Scotch, like a little bit of everything. It was awesome. It was a great birthday present. And then there was all the drinking I just did on the ship.
Just out of a matter of course, going along.
Right. Well, all the lounges that are there, they're themed after different Disney rides. So there was a bar that was patterned after the Haunted Mansion called the Haunted Mansion Parlor. Like they had specialty drinks. There was a Jungle Cruise. There was a 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea style parlor, which is actually my favorite bar out of the whole ship because it was also the sports bar. And this is how it will segue into this. While on the cruise ship, I was able to catch conference finals action in both the NBA and the NHL. And that was a hell of a good time as I sat there one day watching the Carolina, Carolina, Florida.
Yeah.
I try to remember who played who.
Conference
Carolina, finals, Florida, yeah. was fun to watch. And then the Edmonton, series where Edmonton, Dallas, where there was a line of Edmonton fans who were losing their shit as their team secured their place in the Stanley Cup Finals. It was a lot of fun. It was great fun, and it was nice to have those there. And, you know, it's such a different, from what I understand, world from what cruise ships used to be, where, you know, when you were on the ship, like, you really were kind of cut off from the rest of the world. Like, you know, you couldn't string cable television, and satellite wasn't cheap back in the day. And now it seems like it's a matter of Wi-Fi and streaming services, and you get them all in HD glory.
I'll tell this story like I sent you a message, not realizing that, you know, you were at sea and probably couldn't get these. Yeah, you panicked. You said, "Do you have an iPhone?" I was like, "Yes." And it's like, okay, that explains why I'm getting this message and it's not cellular roaming. And it's like, yeah, I think it was like game 5 where Carolina jumped on Florida 2-0. And you're like, oh, they came to play. And then you went off and you did your own playing. And then by the time you came back, right, I'm like, Florida won.
So, yeah. Right. Yeah. So it was, and let's just, I mean, we'll get into that. We're going to talk about the NHL finals so far. We're 2 games in the books. I am once again reminded, and I believe we talked about this back when the show was just hockey talk, but both the NBA and NHL finals, I understand that networks have a hand in this schedule, but come on, guys. The conference finals ended over a week and a half ago, and we've only played 2 games of the Stanley Cup finals. And in the NBA, as we record this, 1 game. And the NBA conference finals have been over for a week and a half as well. We're about to get, like, tonight, on Sunday, when we're recording this, we finally get game 2. And I don't even really want to talk about either series right now, other than Brad Marchand, I still hate you, and you... That was the luckiest, softest, weakest ass goal. I don't know how that got through Skinner's pads and all that. Like, I just don't. Like, it was that puck had nothing on it. It just trickled through it. Like, that's a devastating way to lose a game. But we should be talking about a series that's half over. Like this, like the, you know, the series shifts to Florida now, and I think it's tomorrow, Monday. Is that the next game?
I don't think they're, I mean, for the scheduler's faults, and I agree with you, what you're saying, I think they're smart enough to stagger it against the NBA Finals and not say, hey, let's have them both go at the same time.
But the NBA Finals had like 3 damn days between game 1 and 2. Like, what are we doing? Like, and this is the thing about the NBA Finals that is fascinating to me, because think about momentum, right? The Pacers win that game on another Halliburton heroic, which somebody, I can't remember, this is like the 5th comeback or something that they've had in this playoffs where they've been down deep into a game, you know, 10 to 15 points, and they literally like make every basket all the way to winning games. Like, they just don't die, and they have been clutch to the nth degree. It is insane. And Tyrese Halliburton is on the mother of all heaters right now. But you win that game, and if you are Indiana, you don't want to wait, I would think. Whereas Oklahoma City now got to, you know, get your legs back underneath. And that to me is
They probably didn't want to wait either, to be honest. After blowing a lead like that, they want to get right back out there.
It's just one of those things. Like, 3 days seems ridiculous when the team, well, like when you're in the midst of the 2-game homestand. Like yesterday, Saturday, there were no Stanley Cup or NBA Finals games on, and to me, that's atrocious on a Saturday night. Now, thank you, wrestling fans. You got your WWE fix, where Patrick went 0-for-4 on his predictions, but that's neither here nor there.
Two of them were ladder matches, so I mean.
Well, in my defense, as I posted in the group, I haven't watched a second of wrestling in a month and a half, and I didn't watch Money in the Bank. Like, I just haven't. So it's crazy. So I love these finals in both sports. I know there's some grousing about mid markets. Not major markets for the NBA finals, but this is what people complained about and wanted, is that they wanted parity. And when you actually create parity in the NBA, to its credit, probably has created some of the best parity in sports. You're going to have teams like Indianapolis and Oklahoma City, not exactly like, well, I think it's funny because people think Indianapolis is like is a small city. It's really not. It's like the 7th largest city in the country. It's just sort of spread out funny. But the Midwest is not known as this big mecca. They think of Chicago, and that's it. Maybe Cleveland, which I would argue Cleveland's not even Midwest necessarily anymore. But
right. But like Tony and I were talking, like, I don't mean to cut you off, but I think, you know, personally, mm-hmm. I think this is great for the NBA. I mean, you're going to get somebody's winning their first ever championship. One of these teams is winning their first championship. And like, I think Tony and I, a couple weeks ago, we were talking about Indiana, man, you know, with all due respect to the Colts and, you know, all that stuff, Indiana's a basketball state first and foremost. So to have the Pacers competing and 3 wins away from an NBA championship, that is huge for that city. And Oklahoma City, what else do they have but the Thunder, right? I mean, there's really not a whole lot else sports-wise going on there.
And they've come close several times in the history of their franchise. So, and I do think ultimately, and we'll be talking about this next week too, and well into 2026 when the NBA Finals finally wrap, we will be able to actually look back on the season. But I think Oklahoma City will win the series. But you know what? Everybody said the Knicks were going to beat the Pacers. Everybody said the Cavs are going to beat the Pacers. And nobody's beating the Pacers. So I guess we'll wait and see on that. Over on the hockey side, you know, we talked about the overtime, but these have just been great games so far. Like just back and forth, haymakers being thrown. I hope this series goes 7. I don't think it didn't go 7 last year.
It went 7.
Did it go seven?
Yeah, remember Florida got up 3-0. Edmonton won the next 3, and then Florida.
That's right.
We're not going to get that this year.
We're not going to get that this year. We did get the customary, a team has won on the road, so now it's a series. And I really didn't feel like it was, when Edmonton tied up game 2. I thought, okay, they're gonna pull this out in overtime. Kudos to Brad Marchand and his skill as a cherry picking goal stealer. Like, because he got 2 of those where he was just down ice behind everybody. Because you know the prognosticators or the pundits will say he's a wily veteran. I'll say he's a toolbox who doesn't stay in a play.
Cherry picked him twice in that game. He got a shorthanded goal.
That's what I'm saying.
And then
the shorty was a cherry pick, and then.
I'm like you. I don't.
It's
like
a veteran
guy.
Move. It's a savvy veteran move. I just hate it because I hate the guy.
I don't like the
if
guy.
If I liked the guy,
if he was on the Blues or the Caps, I'd be like, oh yeah, he's my boy. He's my blue. Maybe. You're my boy. You know, that sort of thing.
I'll cheer for him because he's wearing my team sweater. Yeah, but right. I will say, I watching him score that soft fucking soft limp dick piece of shit goal made me sad.
Don't hold back.
I just think
it's felt like Skinner thought that Marchand would get better contact on that, and he just didn't, and he just misplayed the puck completely, because I mean, I don't even know if Marchand got any wood on that thing. It just kind of trickled across.
You can't tell. It's so bizarre to watch that goal and how it went through, but whatever, it's neither here nor there. Game 3 in Florida. That place is going to be a madhouse. Should be an exciting game to check out. And we'll be able to check it out on Monday. And hopefully, go Oilers. I'm not even going to pretend like I'm cheering for anybody. I'm cheering for the Oilers. Oh, no. I want the Oilers to win. I want Canada to get the cup.
You and I have been very open with each other who we're cheering for. And it is not the Florida right. Panthers. It's like, I'm with you.
That's right.
Canada needs a cup. And on top, I've been calling Edmonton to win ever since they got up 3-2 on the Kings. So I'm not right. shying away from that.
So you're tripling down. Absolutely. Cool. All right. We are going to take a quick commercial break. If Dave can figure out how to insert them when he posts it, we'll see what that happens. Otherwise, who knows when the commercial break will be. But when we come back, I got one. We're going to talk a little bit of French Open because history was made on Saturday, and I feel like that is worth talking about. I know Dave watched the women's final, as did I. But then Friday, there was a very significant piece of news that came out of the courts with regards to the NCAA, and I feel like it's worth talking about and wrapping up the show. So stay tuned for all of that. You are listening to the Four Corners Podcast here on the ChairShot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Welcome back, everyone, into the Four Corners Podcast. And folks, on Saturday, if you were not watching TNT and Roland Garros to see the women's French Open final, you missed what I would describe as one of the most epic first sets I've ever watched in tennis. As Coco Gauff was taking on, and I have botched this woman's name like seven times before we've hit record. So Aranya Sabalenka, we're just going to say Sabalenka because that's easy to pronounce. They had a three-set, what started to be a classic until Sabalenka just couldn't stop making unforced errors. She made 70 unforced errors en route to losing the French Open title to Coco Gauff. First American in 10 years to win the French Open since, Serena Williams last won the French Open as an American. Coco Gauff, number one and number two in the world, by the way. Sabalenka, number one, Gauff, number two. And it was crazy. You watch that first set and it goes to a tiebreak. Gauff was up significantly in that tiebreak before Sabalenka sort of settled down, had really found something with her short game, it looked like, with her drop game. And I saw Gauff go down and I was like, well, if this keeps up, it doesn't matter how many errors it makes. It seems like she's just going to be able to out-duel her. And then it just sort of snowballed and Gauff settled down and really took control of the last two sets. It'd be 6-2, 6-4. Like she broke her repeatedly en route to this French Open title. And you mentioned it earlier when you're talking about the NBA finals. Neither one of these women had ever won a French Open. So we got a new French Open champion as well. As we are recording this podcast, the men are going at it. Dave, I don't know if you have it in front of you for an update, but going to a fifth set. Also
two sets down. It's epic.
and it's another number one versus number two matchup, if I'm not mistaken. So you got the absolute best in the world of tennis competing. But Dave, what did you think of that match? And here's the thing is I watched the semifinal between Gauff and Buisson, the French hope, where she just sorted. I mean, she dominated her. Like, it wasn't even close. It happened to be on during my lunch break at work. And so I sat and watched it my lunch break. It was a good match.
What I saw in that match, particularly the third set, was Sabalenka fighting against herself mentally,
right,
and emotionally. And it was very visible.
Very much.
And I think Gauff was the mentally tougher of the two. And when things started to go wrong for Sabalenka, she's looking at her coach, she's screaming at her coach. And it just was not, I mean, things went wrong for Gauff. She never really got rattled. You never saw that frustration from her in that third set. Yeah, she was up, but there were some tenuous moments there. You know, Sabalenka.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up, but not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
What makes for a great vacation? Depends on who you ask. Are you looking to get away? Or bring everyone together? Do you want to get outside and play? Or see a play at the plate? Fortunately, however you operate, I'm the destination you've been looking for. The name's Missouri, but you can call me Mo. And I have just one question. What's your MO? Come see me at visitmo.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
It was very close to breaking back and putting the third set back on serve. And Goff just, you know, she was not going to be rattled, was not going to be denied. Especially like the last game where she had championship point, and I was like, dang, that looked like it might have been long, but it was just in. She just brushed that off, got the advantage out of deuce again, and won. So I thought it was a great match. They're two tremendous competitors, very different. Like Sabalenka is one of those gals who grunts loudly whenever she hits the ball. Goff's as silent as the night, you know, that sort of thing. So it's an interesting contrast.
I blame Monica Seles. Yeah. Nobody did that until Monica Seles started doing it.
Pova put it over the top, and I know.
Right. But congratulations to Coco Gauff. You know, I would assume this means we will have a new number one in all of tennis as we head into our next season, which what's the next tournament? Wimbledon?
Yeah, I mean, yep. The two tournaments are so juxtaposed against each other between –
Right.
If you've ever played tennis, and I'm sure you have, I mean, I used to play a lot when I was a kid, and playing on a clay court is so different than like a hard court. I never got a chance to play on grass.
You slide, man.
You slide, and the ball, everything slows down. You know, like I could hang with my stepfather on a clay court because it would slow everything down. On a hard court, forget it. Never got a chance to play on grass. I would love a chance to, because it's the fastest of the three. So Wimbledon will be next.
Well,
that'll be fun.
And it'll be a good tournament. I think it'll be a very exciting time. So I'm not a regular tennis follower. I am a much like horse racing. I'm a follower of the majors. Give me the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness and the Belknap. Give me the Australian, the French, Wimbledon and the US Open. And those are fun and those are entertaining. And there's a reason that they have longevity. And
you can make the same kind of comparison to golf and the majors there, you know?
Right. Absolutely. So, all right. We're going to wrap today's episode talking a little bit about the decision that it came down Friday as finally, after a lot of waiting, and it has been a lot of waiting and has been planned, but as I want to read the words of Brandon Marcello, who posted this, the NCAA's 119-year amateurism model died on Friday with a judge's pen as the landmark House versus the NCAA antitrust settlement received final approval, opening the door for millions of dollars to be shared between schools and players for the first time. So Judge Claude Wilkin gave final approval after 5 years of litigation. The ending with nearly 1 year of discussions and tweaks. At the end of the day, what it basically means is that now there is revenue sharing in college athletics with athletes. We are no longer the NCAA college sports can no longer, especially at the football and basketball level, cry amateurism when it comes to their players, because revenue sharing is existing across the board. And schools under this settlement can share as much as 20.5 million of their revenues with players during the upcoming academic year. In effect, this was brought about in many ways to sort of limit and start guardrailing players receiving money. And, you know, 5 years ago, it was decided that players could receive compensation for their name, image, and likeness. Universities then were like, whoa, what can we do to sort of manage this? And so some of the things that it does is, one, we talked about the rev sharing. School will have a pot of $20.5 million to kind of share how they see fit. A lot of the powerful four schools seem to be doing a 75-15-10 sort of model when it comes to splitting, with 75 going to college football, 10% or 15% going to college basketball, and then 10% being split everywhere else, however that may be done. The other thing that it's going to do is it's going to create a clearinghouse, an independent third party that will be tasked with examining name, image, and likeness deals for individual athletes over the dollar amount of $600 in earnings to really determine whether those name, image, and likeness deals are reaching fair market value, essentially trying to get rid of what started to happen with the NIL arrangement. Like, there was this fairy tale going around that it was going to let players do car commercials for the local auto dealer and stuff like that. It turned into boosters doing paper play. And you would see schools with NIL budgets, including school like the University of Illinois that I follow, and men's college basketball had one of the top NIL budgets last year for men's basketball, because we like our football. We love our basketball. And I think Illinois was like number two or three. But you saw it this year as this settlement was being waited on. In the college basketball offseason, schools were trying to unload their NIL coffers because they knew this settlement was going to drastically reduce it. And so, for example, JT Toppin, who agreed to come back to Texas Tech, is going to earn $4 million next year in NIL because they inked him to a deal before the settlement was signed. Therefore, he can keep it. And it'll be really, really interesting. Dave, we'll start with your initial thoughts. This is by no means the end of compensation for players. This is going to get sued left and right. There's going to be legal challenges. I have a lot of questions about what this means for Title IX. I do question how enforcement will go, like, because it's about the schools now. The schools are responsible for the enforcement and management of this. What is it all going to mean?
Because they've always been so accountable in the past,
right?
You're definitely more in touch with the college stuff than I am. It does feel like, you know, this feels like they opened the door with all the NIL and the payments and that sort of thing, and kind of got away from the old model, which was, no, these guys can't get paid anything, at least, you know, I'm not over the table. Under the table, we know that it's been going on forever.
Which is the right answer, by the way. Like, I firmly believe athletes deserved to be compensated. Yes. But what I think is interesting is that what were they compensated for and how when they opened NIL? Because all of a sudden, instead of it being commercials, we started to get what they called collectives, donors pooling all of their money together in donations to then bring in talent.
The whole system is still shrouded in shadiness, I guess, is what I would say. I mean, and I think this is kind of like another reaction another piece of the whole puzzle where there's still an element of control that I don't know if it's the NCAA itself, but like you're saying, the individual schools are still trying to kind of keep the reins on this situation from spiraling out of control, or at least create the facade that there's some level of control going on. But I, like you're saying, there's going to be lots of challenges. There's going to be, you know, the extent of, well, how far does this ruling go? Can I do this? Can I do that? Is this fair game? Is that not fair game? And it all comes down to, again, like, what exactly are they being paid for? And how do you define that? And how do, you know, the athletes get around that? How do the schools try to, you know, push back on that? Does this whittle away the power of the NCAA even further? Probably, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, in terms of football, it absolutely does. Absolutely. Like the NCAA, and here's the thing is, the NCAA went to this settlement because they were getting sued left and right, and they weren't winning at all. Like, very rarely were they actually winning. So it's, you know, I think what's interesting with this is, what, you know, the NIL piece is the one that's really interested in. And a local guy in Illinois that I follow, his name's Jeremy Werner. He's a terrific sports writer. He does his homework. And one of the questions that he has, and I'm going to read a little bit for him, is just, skepticism over enforcement is reasonable since college sports programs have a long history of flaunting the rules to try and gain an upper hand. Will another black market emerge? Will we come back to that under the tables? And then he also points out, determining what deals are reasonable seems very vulnerable to legal challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anytime you get that whole reasonableness standard in the courts, in any context, it is subject to interpretation. What one person thinks is reasonable is outrageous to somebody else, and vice versa. So, but like you're saying, and like he's saying, it is a systemic culture that has existed in the NCAA for many, many decades. And this is like, yeah, we're opening the faucet a little bit, letting stuff happen, but we're still maintaining that control. But it's almost like, you know, I mean, it's like a dam failing. You know, you block one thing and then something else pops up here, like Clark Griswold in Vegas Vacation. Put the piece of gum on one thing and then, you know.
Sorry. We're going to hang that up.
Yeah. Tell Ray, we're not admitting you, Ray. Not happening.
No, I don't. He's just not in this group. Oh. So I'm calling him in this group. And he can join that one. Hopefully he jumps off. But anyway, sorry, everybody. Technical difficulties. Ray Cash will be jumping in a second.
I hung up on him.
I hung up on him, too. And now we've started a group meeting. So we are about to wrap this episode up, though. But I do think – so this was just the first step in a very long process within the NCAA. And revenue sharing needed to be a part of it. Obviously, this dollar amount is going to go up and up and up and up as years go by and revenues change and continue. It'll be interesting to see what sports survive at various institutions, and because you have some decisions to make. The Power Four, as they're called, though it's really the Power Two, the SEC and the Big Ten, those are the movers when it comes to college basketball or college football. They're the ones that are going to really drive what other schools do. And within those little microcosms and those bubbles of schools, the real question is, what sports survive? I'll use the school I'm the most familiar with, Illinois. You know, basketball, football, women's basketball is now emerging as Illinois has one of the best athletic directors in all of college sports. His name is Josh Whitman. Do not be surprised if you hear him on a national level at some point, as he is literally he is the chairman of the Division I Council, like across the NCAA college football. He is a big deal.
I think football's the one to watch because that seems to be really pushing a lot of the narrative.
It's not about the football piece of it. It's about then what sports will then survive with this pool and get money, because like in Illinois, football is important because it's important to every power school. Basketball is important in Illinois because it's basketball, and that's what we do. Women's basketball is emerging. But then the third one that's really popping up is, you know, in Illinois, like they have one of the strongest golf programs in the country. This year was a down year, and it was because they didn't advance the match play in the National Golf Championship. They're like the best golf program to never win a national title. The University of Iowa and wrestling, or Penn State. Like those, like what sports are going to still get a decent piece of that revenue sharing pile, and which sports are going to get left in the dust? And schools are going to have to make decisions. And sports, I fear for a lot of Olympic sports that you know, like Illinois used to have a really strong men's gymnastics program. Nope, not anymore.
Track and field.
But it depends on the school, right? If you're Oregon,
right.
If you're Oregon, you're gonna still fund track and field. And say, like, that's what I was getting at with Iowa. Like, I was going to fund wrestling. Iowa, you know, Penn State's going, like, there are certain sports that are quote unquote niche sports. I wouldn't be surprised if SEC schools and West Coast schools continue to put a little bit of money into softball and baseball, because, you know, the SEC baseball games, if you've ever watched an SEC baseball game, just a regular season SEC baseball game on the SEC network, like, those things sell out. Like, that, it ain't no joke. And, you know, it's an ideal environment for that sort of stuff. So it's, there's still a long way to go. And the litigation that is just going to come out, it's somebody is going to sue the second this clearinghouse says an NIL deal is too much, that, you know, Ray Cash isn't worth $4.8 million to sell a Volkswagen in Pawtucket, Massachusetts.
He's not. I mean, I'll just tell you right now, he's not.
But you get my point, because there's never going to be a way to get rid of pay for play entirely, which is what NIL quickly became in the 5 years. I do think it's going to go back a little under the table here and there. Like, I definitely think that's going to happen.
Right. Well, like you're saying, it's that reasonableness standard. What's reasonable? Well, we think this is reasonable. Well, these guys shot down that deal somewhere else. Well, let's just not tell them about it.
Well, and who determines fair market value? Like, you know, it's Deloitte or whatever. They're the third party monitor for NIL deals worth more than, this is my favorite part, more than $600. Like, yeah. What are you even doing? What are you even doing? If you think, like, that $600 is the average NIL deal.
It's like the commercial where the guy takes the girl out for dinner and they're ordering lobster and it's at market rate. And he's like, well, what's the market rate? And it's like, the market rate, you know, that sort of thing. It's just
right. Whatever
we decide it is on a given day.
Yeah, between that and the Title IX question and how funding gets distributed to women's athletics and women's sports, I think those are two huge, very significant hurdles. And then I worry about schools trying to overextend themselves. Schools, because here's the thing is, $20.5 million is the maximum. Not every school can afford that. Like, my little school that I work at, the University of Massachusetts, we don't have $20.5 million. We don't make $20.5 million in revenue in college athletics. So there's also going to be, I think, further striation amongst the level of schools based on your footprint. And that's where I think eventually we get the two major conferences running college football, and they will break. The NCAA will be no more in the way that we know it. I bet you they keep their little basketball tournament because that's their revenue driver. And we'll see what happens next.
And the football playoff, which will be at least 16.
But the NCAA doesn't do the college football playoff. That's not the NCAA. That's outside of it. It's been outside of the NCAA for quite some time since around the BCS. Like, it hasn't been them for years. So if you look, their biggest source of income in terms of lining their pockets at the NCAA is the NCAA college basketball tournament. You know, that's a month long massive event that they're not going to give up until they're sued out of it. So lots to come on that. We have gone over time a little bit. I can't wait to see. This is the sort of stuff that interests me with sports. I can't wait to see more. So when we come back next week, like I said, game four of the NBA finals will have finally happened. You know, it seems like it takes like a month and a half for the NBA finals to finish, and game six of the NHL finals will be done, because suddenly the breakneck pace of the playoffs at the NHL, we're like, whoa, back up the truck. So we'll have plenty to talk about next week. Dave, before we get out of here, tell everybody where to find you on the socials and on the Chairshot Radio Network.
Yeah, you can find me on X and Blue Sky at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG, Facebook.com/Attitude of Aggression, and at Attitude of Aggression, all one word, on Instagram and Threads.
And you can follow me on most of your social media networks at Wrestling Realist. That is at WrestlingRealist. It's good to be back. You'll hear me Monday, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, talking nerdy stuff on Mondays, sports on Tuesdays, and wrestling on Wednesdays with Greg DeMarco when we feel like it. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Four Corners Podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you next week here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.